Thanks for tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
God, we're just so we're so honored that you use us. And God, we're so honored that you love us and that you give us so much grace. And we're just thankful for our church. We're thankful for even the weather outside that has started to become nice and has stopped giving us crazy snow in the springtime. We're thankful for that. And God, we're just thankful for a chance to hear from you. We ask right now that you just remove the distractions from our life and that you would speak to our hearts in a personal way. And God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, today we're continuing our series entitled, What is Love? Baby, Don't Hurt Me. And what we've been doing is breaking down the definition of love. And we get this definition from a guy by the name of Paul. And in the Christian world, we often reference him as the Apostle Paul. And he wrote a letter to a church that he planted in Corinth. And the letter is 1 Corinthians. And it's called 1 Corinthians because he did a sequel, which was aptly titled 2 Corinthians. And in his letter to the Corinthians, he has in chapter 13 an amazing definition of love. And it is to point us towards when we say we love something, this is really what we should mean, especially those who have been loved by God, who would say, I'm a Christian. When you then return love, this is what you're aiming at. And on week one, we talked about how love is patient. Patience is not simply the ability to wait. It's how we behave while we're waiting. Patience is not simply the ability to wait. It's how we behave while we're waiting. On week two, we talked about how love is kind, and kindness isn't overlooking mistakes, but loving people through them. And kindness is not just saying, hey, what you did is okay, and it's fine to hurt me, and you can walk on me. That is not kindness. Kindness, you can speak the truth in love, and you can say, hey, that is a wrong behavior, but I'm committed to you. So kindness isn't simply overlooking mistakes, it's loving people through them. And then last week, Paul flipped the script, and he went from saying what love is to talking about what love is not. And he said, love does not envy. And envy is simply this, it's missing out on what you do have because you're focused on what you don't have. Envy is missing out on what you do have because you're focused on what you don't have. Our theme verse is 1 Corinthians 13. And every week we've been reading over this verse, and it's my goal that by the time we're done with this series, that many of us will have this verse memorized, that we have read it so many times that it will be stuck in your head, that it will be something that you'll just quote and that you'll really know. And if you would just humor me, we're going to read it again this week. 1 Corinthians 13, 4 through 7 says, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. For this part of the definition, this is definitely the first week where you're going to have a hard time seeing yourself in this definition. In fact, there are a lot of you that when you hear this part of the definition of love, you're going to be very tempted to think, I wish so-and-so would have been at church today. I wish that I would have invited, in fact, some of you might even craft a message on Facebook and tell a friend, you've got to get to church for this service, because it is easy, when you hear this part of the definition of love, it is easy to see it in other people. It is incredibly difficult to see it in yourself. So what I want to make sure that we do is for this service, it is off limits to elbow the person next to you, okay? You cannot say, hey, he's speaking to you, he's talking to you. I want you to know that I'm not looking at anyone in particular as I'm preaching this. If my eyes go over you and you feel convicted, that is God, that is not me. So don't write me an email how I was picking on you. This is a definition that it is incredibly difficult and hard to see this part of what love is not in your own life. It's very hard for me to see it in my life, but it is incredibly easy to see it in other people's lives. Maybe you guys have heard of the twins Tweedledee and Tweedledum, but today Paul's going to introduce two twins. It's their cousins, Tweedleboast and Tweedlepride. Now, Tweedleboast and Tweedlepride, these are two things that are incredibly difficult to see in ourselves, but they're really easy to see in other people. And when Paul gives a definition of love, he says that love does not boast and love is not proud. He combines these two ideas together, that these are cousins, these are twins, these are going together around the same path. They mean a very similar thing. Now, when Paul wrote the letter to Corinthians, he wrote it in Greek. And so the Greek language, we've then taken that, we've translated his letter into English, but there's certain words that don't have the exact same weight or meaning in our language. And so when Paul wrote the word boastful, he was really saying this word that in the Greek language, it meant to describe an election won by deceit and manipulation. So when Paul said boastful, he's talking about a specific word that his audience would have known as an election that was won by deceit and manipulation. And even more than that, the Greek word that he used for boastful meant that this elected official who became the elected position because of he cheated, because he rigged the system, he then is going on and bragging about his victory. He's in bragging to other people and saying, look how great I am. I won this election. And it's this idea, this boastful word that Paul uses is this idea of manipulating something, of cheating, of lying, of twisting something, and then bragging about it. For our definition, our working definition is being boastful is claiming your own will and power are supreme over the person you are supposed to love. Boastful is claiming your own will and power are supreme over the person you're supposed to love. Often when we think of being boastful, we think of just bragging and saying, I am the best. But the mindset that Paul is getting at is this mindset that's not just bragging about that you are the best. It is a mindset that your ways and who you are is better than other people. It's this mindset that says, well, this is my favorite movie, and if you disagree, you're a blooming idiot. It's this mindset that says, this is the way that I vote for things, and if you don't vote for these things, you're not just wrong, you are an idiot. It is this mindset that says, the way that I see the world is the correct way to see the world, and anyone that disagrees with me is wrong. There is no margin of error. There is no way that you can argue with the way that I see the world. Being boastful is claiming your own will and power are supreme over the person you are supposed to love. Well, Paul then matches that with the word pride. And when it comes to pride, he is using a Greek word that means puffed up. Specifically, it was a word that if they had a fireplace or a chimney, they would take a contraption that was filled with air and they would push it in to the fireplace or to the fire pit, and it would puff up smoke up through the chimney place. And when Paul uses this word pride, he is really using the word puffed up, that it is this image of a head exploding in pride, of getting bigger than what it should. Our definition for pride is this: pride is believing you are the most important person in the room. Pride is believing you are the most important person in the room. Now, if you're like me, this is where you start to say, okay, this is great. I can take this week off because this doesn't apply to me. I know some other people this applies to, but this is not a talk for me. But I want to get to the heart of what Paul was saying, because Paul was speaking to some attitudes that you may not right off the bat think that pride applies to you or being boastful applies to you. But the reason Paul included that in his definition of love is because of some attitudes and actions that were going on in the church in Corinth. If you remember from week one, or if you weren't here, I'll catch you up to speed. On week one, I talked about how Paul started this church in Corinth. And he's writing this letter partly to encourage them, but he's also writing it because there's some major issues in the church in Corinth. And I want to just kind of go over some of these issues. I kind of brushed over it on week one, but I wanted to show you, I wanted to break down the issues in 1 Corinthians. And this is just a side note. I would love it if some of you would actually read 1 Corinthians in its entirety in your own time. If you would start from chapter 1 and maybe every day over the next week or so, read a chapter of Corinthians, and so that you can get an understanding of what's going on here. But in the letter of 1 Corinthians, Paul attacks some ideas. In chapters 1 through 3, he highlights the fact that the church in Corinth touted their allegiance to different apostles, creating division within the church. And if you go back and read 1 Corinthians, you'll hear this name called Apollos. And there were some people in the church in Corinth who were saying, we follow Apollos. And there were other people who were saying, we follow Paul. And they were causing this conflict within the church. Some people were saying, hey, let's follow this guy's teachings. And someone else was saying, well, I like this preacher better. And Paul says, you guys are being ridiculous. It's not about an apostle. It's not about a man. We all follow Jesus. So stop arguing about who you follow and get your eyes on the right person. In chapter 4, he highlights the fact that the church was critical of Paul. And Paul specifically says that they are critical of him because of pride, that they had some pride in their own life, and that's why they were being critical of him. In chapter 5, he highlights the fact that they boasted of their tolerance for immorality within the church. Now, this is pretty key because Paul highlights the fact that there was some immorality in the church in Corinth, but it wasn't the fact that there was immorality. It was the fact that they were blind to the fact that there was immorality. They weren't trying to hide something from Paul. They weren't trying to live a double life and act one way on Monday through Friday and a different way on Sunday. They were blatantly living in immorality and bragging about it. And Paul said that has no place in the life of the church. And then chapter 6, he highlights that they were suing one another in court. And this is a major issue. Specifically, that he tells them that if you're a Christian, you need to learn how to work out your issues with each other. Why would you go to the world system and to someone outside of the church to fix your problems? Get your junk together and work on things together inside of the church. So these and other arrogant actions are ultimately why Paul writes chapter 13. Specifically, what Paul is doing is he highlights some issues in the church, and he's pointing out to them that, guys, the reason you have these issues is because you're focused on something that is not as good as God. And you have these issues because your mind is off and you're focused on some worldly things and you're focused on your own issues. But if you could focus on something better, in fact, if you could focus on the best thing, it would help fix some of your issues. And Paul says that best thing is love, specifically God's love for us. There's some major issues in the church, but Paul is ultimately saying that the reason you have some conflict is because you settled for something that is not as good as God's love. I love this quote by C.S. Lewis. If you're not familiar with him, he is an old dead guy that has written some amazing things. And C.S. Lewis, this is one of my favorite quotes of his. He says, "It would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at sea. We are far too easily pleased." And what C.S. Lewis' quote is trying to point out is that there's nothing wrong with having pleasure and finding some enjoyment on this earth. That is, those are emotions that were given to you by God. You should enjoy your time on this earth. But the problem is we are far too easily pleased, that we've settled for some good things when infinite joy is out there through a relationship with God, that we've settled for something okay when we could have something so much better. Now, in case you can't relate to C.S. Lewis, I have a modern-day example that I think is the exact same thing. And maybe some of you are familiar with this. A few years ago, 2012, a 12-year-old girl had an assignment to write a paper about donuts. And in her paper, she used 137 words, I believe, to describe the problem with plain donuts. It's going to come on the screen. I want to read to you her letter. I think it's hilarious. She says, "You know what I think is weird? Fake donuts. A.K.A. plain ones. I mean, you just stroll into a Dunkin' Donuts and you see all the different flavors and types like glaze, strawberry, Boston cream, and chocolate frosted. And there, just sitting there among all the wonderful flavors, acting like it belongs there, is plain. Right there, laying on the pink and orange tissue paper with the little shiny silver walls of the crate, it's surrounding it, just like all the real ones. But it's not. It's not one of them. It has no frosting, no sprinkles, no glaze, no cream, no fillings or toppings at all. It should not even be called a donut or a pastry of any kind. It's just a bagel, a bagel." I love that girl is brilliant. She's going places in this world. I love, though, her point, and I think that there's actually a spiritual point to her letter. At the end of the day, there is really nothing wrong with a plain donut. I personally have never met a donut I didn't like. I will eat any donut you put in front of me. People who want to compare Dunkin' Donuts versus Krispy Kreme versus other donut places, I'm like, just give me a donut. I don't care. It doesn't matter what flavor, what brand. I just like donuts. But if you've settled for a plain donut with no glaze, with no frosting, with no sprinkles, with nothing inside, you are settling for something that it may be good, but it is not the best. There is infinitely more joy found in a Boston cream donut than in a plain donut. Yes, now you're awake. Now you're alive. C.S. Lewis put you to sleep, but donuts, now you're amen. Woo, that's good stuff. The point that C.S. Lewis was making, and ultimately the point that Paul was making, is that we as human beings are far too easily pleased. We've settled for mud pies when God has given us a holiday at the sea. We've settled for plain donuts when there's something that's so much better out there. Pastor John Piper, he put it this way. Our chief enemy is the lie that says sin will make our future happier. Our chief weapon is the truth that says God will make our future happier. My thirst for joy and meaning and passion are satisfied by the presence and promises of Christ. The power of sin is broken. We do not yield to the offer of sandwich meat when we can smell the steak sizzling on the grill. I love that image. It's this image of that you've got someone working on the grill and the steak is sizzling, but there's sandwich meat in your fridge and you're saying, I'm just so hungry, let me settle for some bologna and ruin my appetite when there's an amazing steak out there. And Paul's point is that so many of the issues that are going on in the church in Corinth, and I think it's a great message for our current culture today, so many issues are because we are focused on something that is not as good. We are focused on ourselves and our own needs when infinite joy is offered to us through a relationship with Jesus. And Paul says, listen, I want to paint this picture of you that you've got these issues. And I don't want to just tell you how bad you are. I don't want to just tell you about your issues. I want to point you to something better. And the best thing out there is love. And in his description of love, he says, love does not boast and love is not proud. There is no pride in love. Love puts others first. Love says your needs ahead of my own. Now, pride is something that's interesting. And in fact, some people would say that the root of every sin out there is pride. That every issue can be summed up with that there is pride in one person or in both people's lives, or if there's any type of sin or any issues, it is a pride problem. In fact, that guy Solomon, who I referenced earlier, he wrote a book called Proverbs. And if you're new to reading the Bible, or if you've just kind of slacked off Bible reading, I would encourage you to read Proverbs. It is very easy to understand, and there are 31 Proverbs. And I first learned there was 31 Proverbs from my favorite group of all time in the 90s, DC Talk, wrote a song about that kind of girl. And in the lyrics, he said, I open up the word to the book of Proverbs. The 31st chapter tells me all about her. Charm is deceitful and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord, she ain't playing. Hear what I'm saying, because I'm saying it clearly. She's the kind of girl I got to have near me. And so in that verse, I literally learned that there are 31 chapters in Proverbs through a rap song. And there are 31 chapters, and here's what's cool about Proverbs, that you can actually read a proverb a day for every day in the month, even the months that have 31 days. And there's a lot of wisdom nuggets in there. There's a lot of practical help for you. And Solomon, in Proverbs 13:10, he wrote this, pride leads to conflict. Those who take advice are wise. Pride leads to conflict. Those who take advice are wise. Now, whenever I do study for a sermon, I will open up some commentaries and dig in a little bit deeper to find out the real meaning of the words and the heart behind things. And one commentator said about this verse that every conflict known to man comes down to pride. And my first response was, I don't agree with that at all. Like, I don't even know if I agree with Solomon. I know he's the wisest man of all, but pride leads to conflict. I don't know if I agree that all conflict is because of pride. Because the truth of the matter is, some conflict arises just because they're stupid people. I'm not calling you stupid, I'm just saying that some conflict happens just because people are dumb. Like, I saw this picture, I don't know if you've ever seen this picture before, but this picture reminds me of conflict in some circumstances. Okay? If you can't see what's going on, a guy has a chainsaw in between his knees, and he's trying to start said chainsaw. Okay, now I look at that picture, and I say, that's not pride, that's stupidity. Like, there's nothing prideful about that. But then, and you can take that picture down, because some people are cringing, and they're there you go. The more I dug into it, the more I realized that it is pride. It is pride that says, my way is better than anyone else's way. And even if this is really dumb, I would rather do it this way than ask someone else for help. I would rather learn the hard way. I would rather not ask someone else their opinion. I can't get my chainsaw to start, so I would rather stick it between my knees and pull on the chainsaw and just deal with the consequences than to humble myself and ask someone else for help. I was reading an article on pride and trying to help myself understand how so much of conflict deals with pride. And in this article, it said, if there's contention in your home, if there's contention in a relationship that you have with your parents or your in-laws or your children or someone in your church or someone in your workplace, always, 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 the root of that contention is pride. We say that the other person sure is arrogant. It's not the other person's arrogance. It's my arrogance that causes that contention, having to have my way. The article went on to say that pride causes strife because ultimately we say, my way is the best way. And if you don't do it my way, I will get angry at you and I will try to change you and I will try to force you to see things my way. That pride is not content until it can rule the world and cause other people to see things exactly the way that they see them. The pride, wherever there is contention, it's because of wanting to have it your own way. Now, I honestly believe that this pride is not something that is learned. I think it's something that we're born with. I think that even from having kids, you'll see that they want to do it their way, and they have a way that they think is best. And if you're a parent, you've probably had them push back on your ideas. And you're like, you are two. What do you know about the world? Why are you trying to argue with me right now? Your way is not the best. But it is something that is born inside of us. I saw this with my kids. I have five-year-old twins. And a few months ago, my son was having a meltdown of epic proportions. I mean, it was just on a scale of 1 to 10, it was a 20. He was just off the charts. And my wife was working, and so I had to deal with him alone, and I dealt with the situation. I thought I did a really good job. I stayed very calm. I gave him consequences. I took away some toys. I gave him some strict consequences and let him know the consequences of his bad decision. We had a talk. I prayed with him, put him to bed. I felt pretty proud of my parenting skills that night. But then I go to tuck in my daughter, his twin sister, and she says to me, Daddy, I say, yeah, Reese. Hayden was acting horrible. I thought it was a funny use of words. And I said, yeah, he was acting horrible. But all of us act horrible sometimes, and it's not okay to act horrible, but we still love him. And before I could finish up trying to put a positive spin on things, she interrupted me again and said, Daddy? I said, yes, Reese? She said, when I have kids, I'm just going to spank them if they don't do what I say. And I kind of chuckled, and I wanted to respond, but before I could respond, she followed up with saying, Daddy, anytime my kids don't listen to me, I'm just going to smack them. I have no idea where she got this from. This is not from modeled parenting. Like, I don't know where she has pulled this from. But I walked away from that, and I analyzed that conversation, and what I realized was my daughter was trying to tell me how to parent her brother. She wasn't just saying that one day when I have kids, I'm going to do this. She was trying to say in a nice way, you don't know how to parent Hayden. If I was in charge, I would just smack him. I would smack the orneriness out of him. I would put him in his place. My daughter, incredibly nice and really funny, but it just reminds me of how we all have this pride inside of us. This pride that thinks our way is the best way. The way I view the world is the best way. And if you disagree with this, there's something wrong with you. Pride fights for having your way, because it feels like your way is the best way. Love, though, is void of self. To truly love someone, it's not about having your way or forcing other people to change, to see the world your way. Love is literally void of self. That true love comes to a relationship and says, I'm going to put your needs ahead of my own. There is no pride. There is no boasting in love, because I'm going to submit to your needs. I'm going to put you before myself. Love is void of self. And Paul goes on to model this in another one of his letters. He wrote a letter to the church in Philippi, and he tells us specifically how we are to do this, how we are to model this love. In Philippians 2, he says this, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. Let's stop there for a second. Paul says in this verse that all of us, especially those who would say that you are a Christian, your calling is to put other people's needs ahead of your own. And how do you do that? Did anyone catch the word that he said? You must be humble. There has to be humility. in order to put other people's needs ahead of your own, in order to love people selflessly, you have to have humility. Now, this is not easy. In fact, I would say this is impossible. Because I view the world the way I view the world, and I think that I'm right 100% of the time. Ask my wife. And I think that you think that you're right 100% of the time, and you view the world the way that you view the world. And Paul's challenge is to humble ourselves, to put other people's needs ahead of our own. But he realizes how impossible this is. So he tells us that don't just try to do this. Don't just like will yourself, because if you do it on your own, you're going to get frustrated because you're always going to see the world the way you see the world, and you're always going to want to put your needs ahead of other people's needs. So don't just try to do it. Look at what Paul says next. He says, in your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man. He humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So what is Paul saying? Well, Paul is saying, listen, if you're a Christian, the key to have healthy relationships is to find some humility. And the way that we do that is we consider what Jesus did for us. Now, I don't know how often you think about what Jesus did for us, but when I think about it, it brings tears to my eyes. It amazes me that Jesus didn't just die on a cross, and that's a lot, but he didn't just die on a cross. That Jesus left the perfection of heaven to experience the hells of earth. And I like living on earth. It's the only life that I've known, but I know that when you live here, you see relatives die, and you experience pain, and you experience heartbreak. And Jesus left heaven where there are no tears, where there is no crying, there is no cancer, there are no bad days. He left the perfection of heaven, and he took on skin to become a human so he could experience what we experience. And in Paul's letter to the Philippians, he says that he did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, something to be clutched onto. That is, he could have just held the God card and said, you know what, I don't want to go to earth. I'm God. I don't want to relate to these people. They're a mess. They've got issues. They've got problems. I don't want to go down there. He could have clutched to being God. But Paul said in humility, he submitted to our needs. And he said, I'm going to put their needs first. And he humbled him so much that he didn't just come and live amongst us. He put himself on a cross and died for our sins. Now, I don't know what that does for your thinking. Maybe you've heard the story so often that it's just lost any meaning to you. Maybe you've lost the significance of how amazingly radical it is for God to die on a cross for us. But it would be like this. I don't know how you feel about cockroaches. Okay, that's how you feel. Thank you for sharing. But cockroaches are pretty gross creatures. And if you see one, even if you're probably the world's biggest pacifist, you probably squish it. Like, other things you let out the house or maybe you pick up. But, you know, cockroaches cause us to scream and just say that is just gag nasty and we want to kill them and bomb the house and like literally bomb it and move and we're just like we're done. Like, cockroaches are pretty gross. Now, the feeling that we have for cockroaches, just imagine for just a few seconds that one day you're in the kitchen and you see a cockroach scurry through the middle of the kitchen. And instead of saying, oh, that's gross, you say, you know what, I kind of feel bad for the little guy. He has never experienced life like I experienced. He always has to eat the crumbs and the mess that the kids leave. He's never experienced a meal that has been prepared really well. I feel really bad for the cockroach. Now, I can't turn the cockroach into me, so I'm going to try to relate to the cockroach, and I'm going to become a cockroach. Now, none of you would do that. Right? Yeah, exactly. So you're tracking with me here. But not only would none of you become a cockroach to relate to the cockroach, if you did become a cockroach and the cockroaches said, hey, you're pretty good, but we don't like your ways, we don't trust your ways, we're going to put you into a roach motel and we're going to kill you. That is the story of what Jesus did for us. That to have humility and to have compassion for creatures that are so destructive and are willing to destroy themselves and have so many issues, God looked down and he had pity on us. And he felt for us. And he said, I want to experience what they experience. And he became one of us. And then us in our pride, we say, you're doing it wrong, Jesus. So we put Jesus on a cross, but he willingly humbled himself for our good. He died for our needs, to put our needs ahead of his own needs. And ultimately what Paul is saying is that, listen, pride leads to all sorts of problems. Pride and boasting, it leads to contention. It leads to broken relationships. The way that you fix that is through humility. Humility leads to peace. Humility leads to peace. If you want to find a contention, you'll find pride. If you want to find people that can't get along, you'll find pride. If you want to find people who are fighting with one another, it is filled with pride. If you want to solve a problem, enter humility. Humility leads to peace. I love the definition that I first heard from Pastor Rick Warren. He said, humility isn't thinking less about yourself. It's thinking about yourself less. The humility is not saying, woe is me, I'm not good enough, I'm not smart enough, no one likes me, so I need to put myself down. Humility is saying, listen, even though I think I'm right, I'm going to put your needs ahead of my needs. Now just think just for a second. In your relationships where there is contention, and where there is strife, and when there are issues, how different would the relationship be if someone said, hey, listen, you know what, I just want to put your needs ahead of my own. I'm sorry that this is going on. I love you so much that I'm willing to put your needs ahead of my own. How different would the conflict be? If instead of fighting and arguing, saying, no, listen, let me tell you why I'm right, let me tell you why you're wrong, how different would it be if they humbled themselves and just simply said, I'm sorry? And how different would your relationship be if you entered into the relationship and said, for the good of our relationship, I'm going to humble myself, and I'm going to say you're right. I'm not going to come at you. I'm not going to attack you. I'm not going to list out a million things that are wrong with you. I'm not going to try to manipulate you and change you, and I'm not going to get mad at you because you're not the person I want you to be, that in humility, I'm going to put your needs ahead of my own. Humility leads to peace. And ultimately, what Paul does is he says, listen, if you want to experience love, you've got to fight against your natural tendency of pride and of boasting, and you've got to insert in humility. Because there's a better way. There's a better way to live. And the best way to live is to consider what Jesus did for us, is to consider how he put our needs ahead of his own. And when we consider that, then we can do that to others. And when we insert humility into relationships, we can watch as we bring peace to conflict. So here's the application for this week. This is what you can do with this. Who is one person you need to humble yourself before this week? Who is one person? And let's just start small. Maybe you have a long list of people, and maybe you've even been thinking, yeah, there's a bunch of people that need to humble themselves before me, but I want you to focus. I want you to focus on one person that you need to humble yourself before. Who is one person that you could just say, hey, I don't want to get into it again. I'm not trying to stir up old things, but I just wanted to tell you I'm sorry. And we don't have to talk about it. We don't have to mix anything up, but I just wanted to say sorry. And I love you so much that what I want you to hear is I am sorry. Who is it this week that there's been some contention, there's been some problems, there's been some strife? Who is it in your life? Maybe it's been going on for a long time. Who is it that you can insert into the relationship? Humility. Humility leads to peace. It's your choice whether or not you want to offer that or not. But when you do, you point people to the love of God. Would you guys pray with me? God, thank you so much for loving us. And thank you for the way that you love us. And God, we're just so honored that you modeled the way for us, that you set the path. That you don't just tell us to behave, and you don't just tell us what we're supposed to do, but that you actually showed us what it looks like. And so God, I just ask right now that you would just help us to receive your love. That for those of us that want to push back against it, God, you would just soften our hearts. God, I just ask that we would allow you to love us, that we would allow your humble love to bring peace to our souls. God, I just ask that you would help us this week to not settle for the good when we could experience infinite joy in you. And I thank you for what you're going to do. I thank you for how you're going to do it. And I thank you that you loved us first.
Enjoyed and learned from today's podcast. If you'd like to connect with us further, you can check out our website, nextlevelchurch.net, or find us on Facebook or Twitter.